Hello, and I think this will be the final instalment of the bonus episodes between me and Michael Wheeler. And you can find Michael on Twitter at Merkle_Markle. Merkle. And that's spelled Merkle, Markel. So the final instalment of us two jabbering on like a pair of hens.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel along singing a song side by side. Don't know what's coming tomorrow. Maybe it's trouble and sorrow, but we'll travel the road sharing our load, emotional load, not come side by side. Had to do that in a whisper because I'm on the shop floor and some customers are looking at me all funny. All right, see you later, you prick. Love you. Final clarification. Lisa today wrote Three Women, How to Do Nothing is Jenny Odell. So fucked up the old referencing. When I put this out on the podcast, I'm going to delete you saying the clarifications and I'm going to say it for you. So I'm going to pause it after you say that and go, what Michael was actually referring to was How to Do Nothing by Jenny Odell. But I apologise for his bit of brain fog. He's a brain frog. What? No, nothing. Yeah, it's fine. There was something else I had to send you that's quite interesting. Oh, yeah. I'll actually look on my... Actually, I've got to double check who it is. One sec.
So just a quick clarification. The book was Brain Frog by Jenny Dumbbell. So that clarification is Brain Frog by Jenny Dumbbell.
It's Emma Klein in the Paris Review talking about the kind of the version of ourselves we hold in our head and sort of self-fabulizing or auto-fictionalizing, which I touch upon a little bit in the bit I've been writing about my book, saying that my dad, whenever I would ask him to tell, stories from being a detective, he would always say the same excuse, like, oh, it's just procedural stuff, like, it's boring. Like, he didn't want to ever spin a yarn. So I think for him, he thought it was somehow cheap to profit off of, even though you're not profiting in wealth, but in social capital, from someone's hardship. So when I had an argument with the Levi Belfield, the serial killer, the lead detective on that case, when I had an argument with him online, when he sort of came out against Black Lives Matter and said how he thought the Bristol police were being weak when the Colston statue was toppled and rolled into the river. One of the things that my dad said to ask him is whether any of the money, because he wrote a book about the Levi Belfield case, and whether any of the money from the book went to the victims. So I think that's like a sore point for my dad. I don't think he likes it when people do that. Anyway, yeah, read this thing by Emma Klein on Twitter. Really fascinating, really interesting.
I elaborate on that stuff with that lead detective, Colin Sutton. I think it was Colin Sutton, wasn't it, in an episode. I think it's banging on about mutual aid. I believe it's that episode, but one of the earlier episodes of the podcast. So if you want me to expound on that, go listen to Banging On About Mutual Aid.
like the lengths you'll go to, the rhetorical lengths you'll go to protect your self-image or the image you hold of yourself in your head, even if all exterior information and testimonials from other people are indicating that you've done a bad thing or you've been a bad person, you cannot reconcile that with the image you hold of yourself in your head. So you put yourself in knots trying to justify your actions.
It's funny that your dad had a sort of quite interesting life, but was reticent to share any stories about it. But you, in comparison, have an incredibly boring life, but you managed to spin a story out of the smallest, tiniest thing.
I fucking don't have a boring life, mate. Do all sorts. Went and went to a garage today. Bought these like cinnamon rolls, but they weren't cinnamon ones. They were actually toffee and pecan. I've never had them before. That was a novelty. That was a bit interesting experience for my mouth.
I make wheat from chaff, mate. Anyone can tell a story about an interesting life. It's easy. It's cheating, if anything. It's cheating. I went over to Estonia and spent 3 days on my own and sat in a restaurant every single night hoping that someone would talk to me, and no one did at any point. And then I walked around the shopping mall for a while and then got food poisoning off some chicken I got from a petrol garage on the way home from the shopping mall. And that's a story. You can't deny that. That is a story. All the components are there. All the components are there, mate. Went over to Finland. Had a dinner party with some people from Lapland. I mean, that's the extent of that one, of that story. We had a nice evening, had a nice chat. Haven't retained any more details from that experience, but it's a story. They've got clean. I remember I took a journal out there to write about my travels, and the only thing I came back with was a note saying how well maintained the bus stops are. We've got very clean bus stops. I imagine that they probably actually invest quite a lot into the infrastructure of public transport over in Finland. That's my guess.
I think I meant to say bus stop maintenance there, but I suppose within the infrastructure of public transport, bus stop maintenance would be a part of that. That'd be part of the remit of the infrastructure that supports public transport. So you see, interesting stuff. All of this, oh fucking interesting! You back off, will you, Michael? 1,000% fine with Michael being cheeky, being a cheeky boy there.
Hey Jane, mate. Hey Jane. Yeah, no, that article sounds good, so I'll have a read. It sounds more sort of deep and about, like, our own morality and, like, the myths that we tell ourselves about ourselves, whereas just the basic thing that gets me is when you feel like you're in a situation where you can't put your most authentic self over, like, for whatever reason, you get stuck in your own head and it's almost like your entire personality gets caught in your throat and you just can't get it out and, like, I feel like I've been in entire relationships like that where, like, I've not felt comfortable to, you know, say the things that I want to naturally say or, you know, act the way I want to naturally act. And yeah, it's the worst feeling, absolutely the worst feeling. When you feel like you're, you know, how you want to be at your most natural state gets trapped because the external
Just Pope Lonergan chipping in again. I was in a relationship where I once lied about having a prolapsed anus so I could spend 4 hours in the bathroom. Yeah.
It's weird to think when I went over to Estonia for 3 days, though, that four days. I must have spent 4 days in silence. I didn't talk to her. I didn't ring my mum or anything while I was there. I texted her. I was on my phone a lot. And when I checked into the hotel thing, it was like it was all done digitally. It was all like electronics. There wasn't anyone to... Went to Estonia to spend 4 days in silence. Oh, no, I did a Nazi shop. That was an interesting part of it. I did actually go to an antique shop. That was all Nazi. Got some Nazi memorabilia and bought myself a knife and stashed it. But out of 4 days, that's... I mean, it was enjoyable. I loved it. I had a nice time, but there was nothing... No story.
Sorry, Pope Lonergan chipping in again. Just going to plug my laptop in. It's running out of battery. Again, another interesting... detail about my life.
To be honest, I'm actually with you there in the celebrating the shit story. And going back to Twitter, Twitter's actually made me dislike the idea of like the perfect story, like the well-rounded, like the but buckle up, guys. Here's a thread. Here's a story thread for you. And 20 tweets later. And it turns out her nan was dead, but lived next door to her entire life and shit like that. Like, Twitter's actually made me dislike the, you know, that sort of storybook, well-rounded story. So, yeah, if you want to talk about bus stops in Estonia or whatever the fuck, that's I'd probably prefer that than a really sort of well-rounded, almost too perfect narrative.
The bus stops are actually in Finland, so that shows Michael wasn't actually listening properly there, which is a little bit frustrating.
Because I don't really know what my most authentic self is, because as a comedian and a writer or someone where you're marketing a personality, well, that's what I'm doing for the type of comedian that I am, like, it's personality forward. And you become a sort of scrupulous creator of your own myth. Like, you're telling stories, but you're curating stories that will... best support that image of yourself you're putting into the public domain. You don't want to complicate the picture too much. You almost want to be a character, so you streamline yourself so it's the most what's the word I'm thinking of? It's not in jest. It's the most...
I don't know what I was grasping for there, but the most identifiable caricature or type is what I think I was moving towards. Something that has markers so that people can clearly relate to the type of human being you are.
My favorite form of story is when generally older people will be describing something that they watched on telly, but they get so involved in the description they make it sound like they actually know these people in real life and they're not actually characters or people they saw in a documentary, when they're really like So he goes, so this fellow, right, this geezer, he goes over. Anyway, turns out when he gets there, blah, blah, blah. And anyway, so he does. And it's all just like, they're just recounting like an episode of television. But that's my favorite form of storytelling. Quite a unique form of storytelling, but it's good.
Anyway, you know what I mean. But yeah, I don't actually know what my most... I don't think there is an authentic self, to be honest. I don't believe this idea of... I think it's a Socratic idea that there's an essential self, that there's... that you chip away at social niceties or the facade that... you know, the sort of chameleonic facade that changes dependent on the company. But really deep down, there's the real you. I think it's like saying that when people talk about conspiracy theories and they say all power is concentrated into one sort of clandestine entity, one nefarious entity. But really, if you want to talk about the conspiracy, it's not centralized power, it's the system itself, it's the nexus, it's all these different power centers that exist in the world like that. So the nexus itself is the conspiracy. But what I'm saying is, like, all these different parts of yourself lead to the totality of self, lead to the you're an amalgam of all them different things. You're not like a hidden self buried underneath.
It's like the mutuality and reciprocity of different power centers and how they interact with each other rather than an overlord. I don't think that overlord exists.
And you realize the absolute artifice and what a construct it is when you get them 19-part Twitter threads, because when they go viral, them stories, then people try to reclaim past glory. They try to repeat the success of that tweet, but all they end up offering up is like a pale imitation of it. And it's really you can feel the desperation behind it, of them like adding details that are sort of slightly similar to the, you know, to the first thread. And Twitter's made me hate a lot of stuff that I originally probably had, you know, patience for, or even stuff that I liked, because it becomes everything is my meme.
Everything is my mimesis there.
I know what you're getting at, but I think you're going way deeper than what I meant and taking it sort of more philosophical. Like, when I said authentic self, I didn't mean sort of that, you know, deep, sort of high-minded philosophical, you know, who am I truly? I literally just meant, like, so for example, I got lumped into going years ago on a fucking stag curry do with all these blokey blokes that, like, I'd never met before in my life, and I was just a little runt at the end of the table, barely said anything all night, and everyone was like, oh, Michael's quiet, isn't he? Oh, you don't talk much, do you? Oh, you're quiet. And like, I wouldn't consider myself a quiet person, you know. I feel like I'm quite a sociable, personal person, you know. I like to chat and converse and whatever, but whatever it was about this group just made me clam up.
Michael is a very sociable person and a very good communicator, but sometimes he mumbles. Stop mumbling, Michael. But then he would say, sometimes I talk too loud and My voice is too clamorous. People shut down. They stop listening to you when you're burping into their ear.
Like you're leaning into yourself. Because you think this is what they want. I'm giving the people what they want. You know, people have been asking for this type of Pope content. I mean, not explicitly asking for it, but I can sense there's anticipation there. I can sense they're waiting for it, you know, and I think you got to chuck them a morsel. That's what I always say. Chuck them the hits. Chuck them the pop hits, the Pope hits, the classics. Chuck them a little bit of that, you know. It just whets their appetites. So that's what I think anyway. Even this, is this too me? Am I leaning into it too much? Oh yeah, I hate that. I hate when people have. It's like you can't move beyond that initial impression if it's with comfortable that you're with a company that you're not that comfortable with, and you're like looking for a moment of liberation to like reveal, like look at how multifaceted I am. Look at the sparkle of my personality. Please realise that I'm more than this. I'm more than this. Quiet little withdrawn bookish little fuck at the end. Like, I'm more than that, mate. I bought a knife in Estonia from a Nazi. Do you not want to hear my stories? It's that, yeah, I hate that. I hate you get locked in there. I've had that kind of arrested development with certain parts of my family where they just think I'm like very bookish and quiet and will. And we'll always leave the dinner table. We'll always go upstairs for alone time at Christmas, like during games. That I'll like scuttle away upstairs and have my alone time because they think that I'm nervous of games. And I'm like, I'm not. I've got so much to give.
Like, I'm not nervous of games. I don't like games because it's very hard to get everyone to focus on me during games. And I don't like that part of games.
I've got so much to fucking give and you have not made an effort to try and uncover it. But it's like, it's completely my fault. It's just, there's just some company that I don't think would be receptive to what I have to give either. They don't put any value on what it is that I am giving. Like my brother puts no value on the things I do well. Which is a shame because it's, I mean, you could say it's slightly reciprocated, but I, no, because I admire his athleticism and sort of physical prowess. I can see how that's an accomplishment and the work that goes into that. So even if it's not, you know, they're not my goals in life, I can appreciate and respect people who put everything into that. Yeah.
But yeah, no, you are absolutely right. It's the worst feeling. Yeah. Part of me looks back on that curry night and thinks, was it my fault or were they just, because they're all like telling stories and like they all knew each other obviously and like maybe just no one would flourish in that situation, but I don't know. I think my, it sounds really like pathetic, but I always think like if I'm meeting someone for the first time or whatever, like if that can be in the pub or a bar and I can have a delicious pint in my hand, then I feel like that will be sort of conducive to my sort of most natural self coming out. Other situations, I don't stand a fucking chance.
Yeah, like I haven't, yeah, I would say I have like an unearned faith in my ability to connect with someone on a one-to-one basis like that, where it's just me and them talking. But yeah, I'm not the kind of person who wants to cut through the cacophony of like a social situation and thrive at a party. And really, there's too much going on. I want all focus to be like on me, like completely fixed on me, or you know, us focus fixed on each other, so we can like really engage. We can limit the amount of noise going on. Have you seen that Martin Amis has got a second autobiography coming out? It's good stuff, man. I reckon it's going to be good stuff. I always say I don't like Martin. I don't dislike him. I'm ambivalent about my thoughts on Martin Amis. I definitely don't like the fiction. I really love the essays, but I still think the experience, the initial autobiography is still like the best autobiography I've read. But I don't know, mate. Now that my reading habits have like matured from that point, I don't know if I'll look back on it as being so brilliant if I read it now. I don't know.
Yeah, Martin Amis is a weird one. Like, I can remember absolutely being like just knocked off my socks when I read Money, but that was quite a few years ago now. But there's a passage in that has always really stuck with me about his receding hairline. That's just one of my favourite passages in any book, I think. But yeah, that was years ago, so I'd be interested to see what I thought. And yeah, I don't know, sort of like, I see like there's a few snidey comments online. I think he's seen as like, you know, one of those old dinosaurs now, like quite fusty. So yeah, be interesting to see what that is like. But yeah, like you say, I really liked the first experience that he did. But yeah, I'd be interested to see what this is like. But as I say, I've not read loads, but I remember really liking Money. I'm trying to think what else I read. I read the Rachel papers. I was a bit disappointed with the Rachel papers. Especially because I think I remember I read it when I was like at university and of the age when a story about a confused young man would have really appealed to me. And I was still a bit disappointed by it. And then I think he released one a few years back about a load of friends going to a chateau, and wasn't really a massive fan of that. But yeah, Money is the one. I remember really liking Money, but as I say, it was a few years ago, so I'd be interested to see if it holds up at all. But yeah, I don't know. I'm always a bit put off by that sort of that group, like him and Salman Rushdie, and by that story that would get bandied around when it was okay. Like, they'd talk about these like extraordinary lunches that they'd go on, and I'm not going to get the details. They should have to look it up. But there was like a game that they'd play where it'd be like, we do this really funny thing where we replace one of the words in a book title with the word sex, and it's fucking hilarious, honestly. And that's, yeah, stuff like that. I can remember reading that little anecdote and cringing pretty fucking hard. So, yeah, I don't know. Martin Amis, who's to know? Do you know Martin Amis? Does Martin Amis know what a Martin Amis is in 2020. Maybe we'll find out. Who knows? Interesting. Exciting. Very exciting. Let's find out.
Oh, yeah. Like all that sort of group, like Will Self as well, they've all been relegated to to being dinosaurs now, whereas in their head they pretty still retain this image of themselves as like literary bad boys. And that's the sort of the foffing, like the foffy, like literary, like games, like wordplay games. They'd play a naughty wordplay. And they thought that was like them being like really smutty and politically incorrect and dangerous. Like when he would write about him and Rushdie and Hitchens like playing games to do with puns, like naughty pun games. That's the shit I can't stand. Oh, mate, that's so fucking weird. We both said exactly the same thing. I swear that I'd die of cancer that I didn't listen to your clip before I sent mine. Fucking mad, mate. Brainwaves.
Michael unsent a message.
You've gone back in time, mate.
And there we go. We wrapped it up. The final in the series of podcasts for me and Michael. We might do another one in the future. But go listen back to the other ones if this is the first time you've listened to this conversation. And they're in chronological order of when we sent voice notes to each other throughout the day. So sometimes I'll refer back to something that you heard 2 minutes before because of the way the voice notes were said. As always, thank you for listening. I have got a Patreon now. Please only pledge any money to me if you are independently wealthy, you know, that you can be a benefactor or a benefact. Is it if I'm benefiting from it, am I the benefactor? If you know what I mean. And if you're dying and got no family, no one else to send the money to, give it, or just give most of it to me at that point. You've got nothing else, mate. I'm your lifeline. Shouldn't I be financially compensated for that? I am your lifeline. Got nothing else, just me in your ears. Patreon.com/PopeLonigan. There's different tiers. I'd recommend the £3 one. You know, it's I'm not worth much. My social capital, I haven't climbed that high just yet. My social capital is still quite low. When the fucking book comes out, though, I'm going stratospheric. No, that's not the way things work nowadays. People really break out. I'll get a nice little boost, a bit of momentum, and I hope you actually enjoy the book because I've put in a lot of work into it. And my profile will be slightly bigger. But please feel free to pledge, but only do so if you have the means, if you have a lot of disposable income. Normal episodes every Tuesday as usual. So I'll see you again on Tuesday. Thank you.